comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
At the Kevin Smith Show. The audio problems. You may not believe this, but the truth is, all of this equipment gets tested out every day, and it passes the test, or we fix it. It passed the test. But once again, weird stuff right at the beginning of the show. I don't know why. Anyway, welcome to Talk Radio Like Nowhere Else on Earth. I'm delighted that you are here, and I think you're going to be delighted that you are here as well. Have you seen the news about the team of scientists in Japan who are the team includes a Russian and one or two Americans as well. But they are going to attempt to resurrect a woolly mammoth. Yes, indeed, that's what they intend to do. It'll be a 5-year project. They say it'll take about 5 years to complete this and be able to produce by cloning a woolly mammoth. Now, you're aware of the fact that several woolly mammoth bodies, not just skeletons and not fossils, but bodies with tissue, have been discovered over the years in Siberia, right? And a couple of other places, but primarily in Siberia. They are going to take the nuclei of some cells from mammoth tissue and implant it into an egg from a modern elephant, and then implant that egg into an elephant, a surrogate mother, if you will. And they say they should be able to produce an actual woolly mammoth within about 5 years. Now, you know, if this thing is successful, it should provide some very interesting insights into elephant sociology, shouldn't it? I mean, just imagine if it's successful. Imagine when Junior has grown to the size that he's looking down on the largest elephants in the herd. That includes the alpha bull. And especially if Junior isn't Junior, if Junior is Jane, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? It makes you wonder what a bull elephant is like when he's intimidated by one of his cows. And then there's the whole thing of, you know, will this then be the beginning of a new branch of psychology to help the formerly alpha bull elephant get over his intimidation? And then, of course, there's a whole new branch of law, mammoth law, and that's where the people from PETA can sue. They can go to the mammoth lawyer, and they can sue this team of scientists for creating something that they should have foreseen was going to cause psychological problems in the herd. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Alex Hearn. Alex has been with us before. He is originally from the great state of Massachusetts, and he is a cryptozoologist, a well-known cryptozoologist. He moved to the great state of Arizona, and he founded the Arizona Cryptozoological Research Organization, AZCRO. And let me say, because we had everything tested out with the audio, we do a pre-flight checklist, everything was tested, everything worked, and I had to switch. I had to change something because when we went on the air, it wouldn't work. It's just wonderful when that happens. But because of that, Alex may or may not be able to hear me. Alex, welcome to the show, and can you hear me?
I can hear you pretty good. I can tell there's a little static, but I can hear you pretty good. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. So we just did a little check, and it's working. Alex, cryptozoology is something I think everyone has a little bit of interest in. Some people have a lot of interest in. Now, the reason I said everyone has a little bit of interest, if it weren't true, if that were not a true statement, then we would not have movies like The Thing, Creature from Boggy Creek, and so forth. I mean, those movies. And there's always, you know, some cryptozoological monster out there just around the corner for the next thriller movie, the next horror movie. So everybody's got some interest in it. But I think a lot of people are of the opinion that cryptids, in other words, the creatures, the animals that cryptozoology looks for, I think a lot of people are under the impression that these are just myths. They're not real, and people who say they have seen one really didn't see a cryptid. They saw something a little bit unusual that they couldn't identify, but it is truly an identifiable known animal. So let's deal with that first. How would you respond to that?
Well, you're 100% right, and the question is kind of almost a trick question, because technically, cryptozoology really isn't the science of myth. So, you know, when you say a cryptid, it really has to have some basis in reality, at least that some people think that it's real.
And okay, but how would you respond to, and I think, you know, if we take the whole population of the planet or the whole population of any country, and we name any of the creatures that you and I refer to as cryptids. Let's just do away with the word cryptid. Bigfoot, Sasquatch. That's probably the best known among the general population. And among the general population, the majority would say, "Yeah, I don't know. I think it's you know, it's just myth. I don't believe they actually exist." And yet, you're out there looking for them. So how would you answer that?
Well, that's exactly it. It's the science of unknown or hidden animals. And usually the cryptids, in this case, Bigfoot, is known to a small population of locals, population of locals where the creature exists. And you know, that was exactly what Bernard Heuvelman's definition was on the science of cryptozoology. It's the science of hidden animals more than unknown animals, because the animals or the cryptids are usually known to someone more than just being a myth. You know, someone somewhere thinks these animals exist, you know? And that's slightly different from mythology. And in for Bigfoot, well, I've seen him, so he definitely exists. But we're still trying to prove he exists. So did I answer your question?
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the best, I think one of the best answers that I've heard that fits that is from Dr. Meldrum. And I know you have to be familiar with Dr. Meldrum, Idaho State University. His whole deal, I mean, his PhD is all about studying the physiology and the structure, if you will, of animals, the way animals are put together and how they move. And he got involved a few years ago in collecting and analyzing footprints, plaster casts of footprints. And he's actually been out in the field and seen some of these footprints in the mud, in the dirt, and done plaster casts himself. And I saw him on a documentary say, "I cannot prove that Bigfoot exists, but this," and he showed a plaster cast, and he said, "but this plaster cast and many, 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 many other plaster casts could not possibly have been made by someone carving a great big foot out of some inflexible material, like a big wooden foot, and you strap it to your shoe and go out and make footprints in the mud." He said it's not possible. And then he explained why, with the expertise of his particular field of study. And he showed how this is the foot of some primate. And he said, I can't prove Bigfoot exists, but that was not made with an artificial foot. And that's kind of where we are, isn't it? We can't actually prove Bigfoot exists, but what we can pretty much prove is that the evidence left behind is not being left behind by someone in a monkey suit.
Correct, correct. And he's a big part of that. It was through him that we discovered the mid-tarsal break, dermal ridges, actually Mr. Chilcutt with the dermal ridges, but he got together with Dr. Jeff Meldrum.
Mm-hmm.
I actually emailed him not too long ago. He has a link on his site that's incorrect on his site at isu.edu. And it's a link to one of the enemies, or we'll just say competitors, radio shows, and he's got it incorrect, so I was making him aware of that. Excuse me one second. Sorry, Kevin. He deals mostly with the locomotion of the foot, the morphology of Bigfoot, and he's been... And I don't want to say anything bad about him because he's definitely one of my mentors and someone I've looked to for guidance. I was lucky enough to contact him shortly before Mitch and I got our first Bigfoot print that was good enough to cast.
All right, who is Mitch?
Mitch Waite is... my best friend and partner here in Arizona. We hunt cryptids together, specifically Bigfoot, or as we like to call them, or as Mitch likes to call them, the Mogollon Monster.
And, let's explain to the audience why you're calling them the Mogollon Monster.
Excuse me. Here in Arizona, one of the big encampments is or big, you know, cliff, is the Mogollon Rim. And a lot of, I'm having a little coughing fit here. Well, a lot of the Bigfoot slash sighting, Mogollon monster sightings have been in and around this Mogollon Rim. Basically what it is, hang on. Forgive me, Kevin. My eyes are watering and everything. Got a little tickle in my throat here.
I remember what this time of year used to do to me when I lived in Arizona. It used to do the same thing to me.
Especially in the dryness here in the valley.
Yeah.
Sorry again. If I had a mute button, I'd be using it right now.
Okay, well, so the Mogollon Rim actually is about a 200-mile rim. Our cliff that runs from Flagstaff, Arizona, over into New Mexico.
Exactly, into midway through New Mexico. Basically what it is the Colorado Plateau coming down over the shelf that's south of that one. It's basically a major tectonic shelf, and one is, you know, the one is riding over the other. The Colorado Plateau, as they call it, is riding over the southern tectonic shelf, and literally you can see the edge of the Colorado Plateau, or the edge of that tectonic shelf. So you're looking right at history. It's really cool, and it's about a 1500, in some places it's 2000 feet cliff. And in other places, it's not quite that high, but pretty much on and off from Flagstaff right through the midpoint of New Mexico. And it's very, very, very picturesque and scenic and eye-boggling in some points.
Okay, so you have a lot of the Arizona Bigfoot sightings. A lot of that takes place on the Mogollon Rim.
And the creature has kind of become known as the Mogollon Monster. And he was well known before there was the terminology Bigfoot. Back 100 years ago, in the 30s, there was reports of the Mogollon Monster. And Mitch Waite runs a website, MogollonMonster.com, and together with his wife, he has wrote a book which is some of these campfire stories from throughout history, from his family. He's a fifth-generation Arizonian. So some of these campfire stories are from his family. Some are from, you know, just the other families that they've encountered. And they have stories of, you know, Bigfoot going back some 100 years, and it's a great little read.
Okay, now, you've investigated reports of cryptids both in on the U.S. side of the border and the Mexico side of the border. I would assume you're not doing a lot of wandering around in the wilderness on the Mexican side of the border these days with all the killings and gunfire.
No, I was down there a few years back, and I had a guide, so it wasn't anything out on my own, because it's too easy to get in trouble that way, especially down there. But I was in the mountainous area of Guerrero, and they have had some reports of a larger primate, and, you know, the guide took me to some of the locations that we had reports, and we interviewed some of the locals. It was pretty neat. Basically, not quite a Bigfoot type creature. It's more of a larger primate type creature, you know, on the idea of a gorilla. Mm-hmm. They do have some monkeys in southern Mexico and South America and Central America, but they don't have any larger primates. So that would, you know, and they still get reports of larger primates down there, and that would be one of the cryptids of Mexico.
Okay, so what would differentiate a Bigfoot from just a larger primate?
Well, I think what Dr. Jeff Meldrum would probably say is that they supposedly walk upright, whereas a gorilla still has that bent over stance and knuckle walks. Bigfoot has been seen in most cases, not in all cases, to walk upright, stand completely erect like Homo erectus, or you and I.
Okay, so you're doing most of your investigating now, I would presume, in the Arizona area. So let's focus on Arizona. Have you had any fairly recent sightings, reports of sightings of Bigfoot in Arizona?
Well, this past year, I didn't have any actual sightings, or any people that I'm in contact with didn't have any actual sightings. On any of my searches, except for on a July morning, Mitch, we were at a location that we call the Hot Zone, very near where I had my sighting in June of 08, and he arose early morning, was just sitting by the campfire, and saw something big and hairy walked down the road. He was only having his coffee. No one else was awake yet. He got us guys awake. We went up there, and of course, it's quite a walk to get to the road where he saw it. You have to kind of go around. There's a creek in between. So when we got, we couldn't chase it, and by the time he got us up, it was out of sight. But we did find a trail leading to that point. And coming down off a ridge that was directly southwest of where he had the sighting on the road. So we had a lot of activity. We had a lot of rock throwing incidents, both ourselves and people we sent into the area. I had friends go into the area that, originally that bring them out as team members, and then of course they want to go back on their own. And I had one young man, and we'll say hi to him. Hi Steve, how you doing?
All right, we have to step away for break, and we'll pick up right there when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Alex Hearn. And Alex, you were telling us about this event back in July where you had you sent people into the area and they were having rocks thrown at them as well. And we had to go to break. So let me just let you pick up there, and the floor is yours.
Excellent, Kevin. Yep, Steve visited shortly after we were there in July.
Okay, who's Steve?
Brother and a friend.
Who is Steve?
Steve is just one of my buddies who's come out with us and interested in what we do and follows us online and such. So he wanted to know a good place to go camping. We directed him to our area. He brought his brother and his other buddy up there, and they just went up there for a weekend. He didn't tell them pretty much anything about what we do in the area except for camping. And midway through the first night there, they were awoken by a loud scream slash growl. And he described it as piercing, vibrating, and his brother and his buddy were just terrified. He actually didn't hear it. It woke him up, and he woke up, and they were, awake and terrified, and they were like, "Did you hear that?" And he said, "No." But, you know, not that he recognized it anyways. Obviously, it woke him up, so he heard something, but not enough to describe it like they did. So then he told them why we go there, and they were all really interested and pretty shocked at what happened. We've sent some other people up there, and two different groups have had rocks lobbed into their camp. And as far as I know, there's no animals in the forest that throw rocks, and at least not in the Arizona forest. And also we've had my buddy Brian, who's part of the team and has been out with us a few times, went up there on a recreational weekend with his girlfriend. They happened to go to one of the campgrounds near where we've had the most incidents, where Mitch had his July incident, and they had something come into the camp, walk around the tent, was breathing heavily outside the tent. His girlfriend was awake, and they're an older couple. In that, I mean, they're not teenagers. They're close to my age, not quite as old as myself, but they're not, you know, teenagers. They're not frivolous. She was awake. She tried waking Brian up, and, you know, they had been having a good time all day, so he was just sound asleep and would not budge. But she was terrified, and whatever it was walking outside her tent. She was just afraid to look, and Brian wouldn't get up, so she was just scared, you know, out of her wits. And
let me tell you something.
Creature, we don't know. Could it have been a bear? It certainly could have been. This is a great bear area. There's a lot of bear hunters there during bear hunting season. I've known hunters who've gotten, you know, double-digit bears out of there over the years. So it's big bear.
Well, and let me say, it's the deal about he wouldn't wake up. You know, I know that when you become accustomed to certain sounds, then they just don't have the effect of waking you up. Now, one of the places where I was stationed when I was international police, there was still nightly gunfights on the street with machine guns, AK-47s. But they were usually away from us, several streets away. I woke up one morning, and my wife, who was from that general region of the world, she was from Romania, I woke up, and she's all shivering, and she got her back up against the corner, and, and she kind of got her arms wrapped around her knees, and I said, "What in the world is the matter?" And, she flew into me. And I said, what's going on? She said, there was a machine gun fight right outside our window. And I tried to wake you up and you wouldn't wake up. And I thought, okay, she's had a bad dream. I went outside and there's shell casings everywhere. She was exactly right. It didn't wake me up. And when she said right outside the window, she was exactly right. I mean, right outside the window on the ground, shell casings everywhere. And so, you know, when you become accustomed to certain sounds, which he would be accustomed to if he's going out there and camping and, you know, he becomes accustomed to sounds of things in the forest, and it just doesn't alert you.
Yeah, and I think he had been maybe indulging a little bit more than...
Oh, well.
than he normally would, because he was, you know, on rather a vacation kind of camping trip more than research.
That'll do it, too.
But I think you're 100% right, because when we go out, you know, we'll have people up all night. He's one of the early risers, so he's used to us walking around the tent, doing, you know, the research things we do, walking around with the night vision, looking into the woods on the outskirts of the camp near his tent and stuff. So
Okay, so all of this in July, this was back up at the Mogollon Rim?
Actually, just south of the rim, mm-hmm. in an area Mitch and I call the hot zone, which mm-hmm. is south of Young, Arizona, or south of Hagler's Creek, Arizona.
Okay. All right. Now, this all has to do with Bigfoot, but these are not the... not the only cryptids that you hunt or that you try to locate. What other cryptids are reported to you in Arizona?
Well, in Arizona specifically, we'll have, of course, El Chupacabra, you know, and that's the chupacabra that everybody knows about. We have a Mothman-type creature. A couple different reports, so there may actually be more than one. And I'm not sure if it's related, but really cool statue made out of tin or copper down in Young, Arizona that I got a couple of pictures from. And I put a media section up on my Facebook page, on the AZCRO Facebook page. So anybody that does Facebook, just search for AZCRO within Facebook, and you'll pull up my site and the AZCRO site, and there's a section under photos, which is labeled media, about 100 photos, just a little bit of everything that we've found.
Okay, so what is this statue?
It's a statue that looks sort of like a cross between a Mothman creature and maybe that creature in the Jeepers Creepers movies with Justin Long, which is kind of a, only the Young Arizona statue kind of has a Western flair. It almost looks like a Western reaper, a cowboy-faced reaper with wings. And, you know, and I'm not sure if the person that made that statue just had an idea out of his head or if he was doing it because of these sightings. But we've had some Mothman-type sightings of a winged man or a winged creature as big as a man. And then there's been some giant bat and giant bird sightings and a giant flying creature called the yo-yo that a lot of people see it. I believe what Mitch describes it as doing, eating roadkill. So chances are it sounds a lot like a vulture or a condor. I've seen some pretty big California condors and vultures myself, and I suppose, you know, there's always a possibility we could see one of the larger condors from South America.
Okay, now let's go back to the bats, giant bats. How big?
Well, we didn't actually get a close-up of it, but this one actually swooped down on Mitch a couple of different times, and that one was described about the size of a hawk or an eagle, so, you know, a good 3-4 foot wingspan at least, and possibly bigger.
Well, they exist. I've eaten them.
Ooh, are they good?
Well, you know, it tastes a little bit like a rat. It's similar to rat. You ever have rat?
I haven't, but I've done, you know,
Have you had squirrel?
Yeah.
Okay, it's similar to that. All right, in East Timor, when I lived there, we had bats with 6-foot wingspans.
Wow.
Okay, so it's quite possible that someone may have brought one or two of these bats from that part of the world back here, and maybe either they or some of their offspring escaped into the wild. That's quite possible. They're called fox bats or flying fox. And they're big.
That sounds really big. And we do have a lot of, you know, in Arizona and New Mexico, the caverns and mm-hmm. caves, and of course, you know, we have the Carlsbad Caverns in New Mexico and the Kirchner Caverns here in Arizona, And both of them have, you know, a huge, huge bat population. And I'm sure that in the area we have other caves and geological features that are similar to these caverns, just maybe not as big. And these bats could come from there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Or if someone released one of these larger bats, it could survive here.
Well, let me tell you, if you go on YouTube and you just do a search for fox bat fights python, you will see a python that looks to me to be probably 9 to 11 feet long. Hard to tell because it's a video. And it's trying its best to kill this fox bat, and the fox bat wins. So they can, you know, they can pretty well take care of themselves. So it's quite an interesting animal. All right, I want to go back to that statue for just a minute. What's the story locally that people tell about that statue? Why is it out there? Well, first of all, where is it? Is it out in like a public park or something?
Actually, it was on a lawn in Young, Arizona,
mm-hmm.
and it's been there for a long time, as long as I've been going there the past 5 years. It was removed this year, and I never actually interviewed the people that created it, or at least that owned it now, and I believe, they're the ones that built it. I've been told they're the ones that built it. They had two. One was of a guy, a cowboy-looking guy, but with a real scary face, with like a cape over. You couldn't tell if he had wings or not. He has a cape over his back, but he does have like a hump back there, like maybe there's wings under the cape. And he's still there, but they took the photo that I like the most, which is the one with the wings and the almost a devilish-looking cowboy hat, a devilish-looking face with a cowboy.
Yeah, yeah. So they they took it away. Okay, we got to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are talking this evening with Alex Hearn. He is the founder of the Arizona Cryptozoological Research Organization. And we're talking about cryptid activity in Arizona. Now, we were talking about these statues. Now, look, let me ask you this. This is a statue that, to you, sort of looks like Mothman, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you said there have been some reports in Arizona of a Mothman-type creature. Can you tell us where, what region of Arizona have they seen Mothman active?
Well, obviously, in the mountains near the Sierra Anchaes and the ranches in the town of Pleasant Valley, or now called Young, up in the Springerville area, up in the Apache County, but on the Navajo Reservation, in the northeastern corner of Arizona, up in the Canyon Deschelles area, south, say, of the Four Corners area, though, not quite up that far. And
Okay, and when is the most recent report of a Mothman-type creature in that area?
We don't have any recent reports. The reports we have are all older, mm-hmm. and nothing nailed down with any actual names or locations. So just the towns. And, of course, in Young, they recently had the statue, so that helped us tie it to Young. Now, you asked me about the statue itself, and I spoke to the locals, but I never spoke to the person that built it, and then this year it disappeared. So it was kind of disappointing. And what I found out is that they moved away. They sold the other statue to a neighbor, and it's still there. So if you drive through Young, you'll see that statue. I suppose you could talk to the neighbor, and he might know. And I don't mean you yourself. I mean any of our listeners that are interested. The neighbor, that the man that owns the other statue now, may know where the statue that I'm talking about has gone. But I do have pictures of it. Giant Thunderbird sightings in Tucson. And it's hard to tell if the giant Thunderbird sightings and the giant, you know, owl or Mothman, Owlman or Mothman sightings are not different variations of the same creature. And there's been giant bird sightings or Thunderbird sightings in the Tucson area in just the past 5 or 10 years.
I'm sure that there are people listening to the show who have never been to Arizona. I'm absolutely sure of that. So let me describe for you folks. Just north of Phoenix, you're no longer in the desert. Just north of Phoenix, I mean just barely north of Phoenix, you get into the trees and you get higher into the mountains there, and you begin to climb into the mountains almost immediately after you go north of Phoenix. There's snow in the wintertime. It's not a desert. It's absolutely beautiful, and it's not a desert at all. Pine forests everywhere. You keep going north, and you get up onto a plateau. And that's the most of the state across the north is the Navajo Nation, Native American nation. Okay, and then if you go back to Phoenix, you're in the desert, and as you travel south, you stay in the desert till you get to Mexico. It's desert all the way. However, it's not quite as severe. The temperatures are not usually quite as severe in the Tucson area as they are in Phoenix, and that's because Phoenix sets in a bowl. It sets in a valley. And so I used to live there, did not often get cool breezes from anywhere, and because you're down in that depression. The point is, if you leave any of the cities in Arizona, Phoenix, Tucson, Flagstaff, any of the cities, or any of the small towns, go any direction in Arizona, and you're very quickly in a big open or a big vast wilderness. And so there can be a lot of creatures living out there that we didn't know were living out there, and maybe some we didn't know existed. I'm a little bit curious about this chupacabra sighting, or maybe there were multiple chupacabra sightings. Where did this happen?
There's been multiple chupacabra sightings in Arizona, El Chupacabra. In fact, we've had them in the location, the desert just north of Lake Roosevelt, and south of the mountain range, which, as you describe, Lake Roosevelt, you're already elevated about 3,000 or 4,000 feet, but you're still high desert in most of that area. As we go up the road that goes behind it, Route 288 towards Young, you immediately start increasing elevation, and you get to a point where it's still high desert, but you're right about to get into forest, and right along that way location was the most recent sighting. And it, we call it El Chupacabra, but we don't really believe that it's anything but a dog of some kind, a canid of some kind, coyote, wolf coyote hybrid, dog coyote hybrid, with mange or some other skin disease, but everybody pretty much agrees that it's mange, in severe case of mange. There's theories on how it could survive with mange, and eventually it does probably expire from the disease or the parasite. It's not actually a disease, but the parasite causes a number of sicknesses and ailments. But the most recent sighting was just in the past fall, at least that we've gotten, and it came from just north of Roosevelt, which is just outside of Globe, on the way to the Anchaya Mountains, Anchaya Mountain Range.
And, folks, Globe, Arizona, is to the east of Phoenix. And actually, when you get into Globe, you're into the trees.
You are. And yeah. This location is about 15 miles west of Globe. It's in literally Globe, Miami, is probably the edge of where the high desert turns into, mm-hmm. Forested area. But 15 miles to the east, you're even on the outskirts of this area, so you're still in the high desert. But as soon as you go, back towards Globe, you start going up. And as you pass Globe and you either go towards San Carlos or further up the 60 towards Sholo, you're increasing elevation the whole way.
As a matter of fact,
same with the area we go. Sorry, Kim.
When you come out of Globe headed toward Phoenix, you literally, folks, there's a long stretch where you're just dropping off the mountain and headed back down, and you descend into the desert. We've had chupacabra sightings in Arizona. We've had Mothman sightings. We've had these giant bat sightings, which doesn't seem incredible at all to me because I've got personal experience with those animals. But this yo-yo, what in the world is a yo-yo?
Well, it seems to be some kind of smaller type Mothman type creature, owlman type creature. It's a bird of some kind.
Well, now, is it a bird or is it a Mothman? I mean, is it a bipedal or?
I try to look at everything logically. So, even Mothman, I'm thinking is probably some kind of giant bird.
All right. We have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this, folks. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Alex Hearn. He is the founder and chief investigator for the Arizona Cryptozoological Research Organization. We've been talking about various types of cryptids that are reported around the state. I want to go back, Alex, and folks, I'll open the telephone lines in just a moment. So do not despair. Just limber up your fingers, and we'll be ready in just a moment for you to participate with us. But I want to go back for just a moment, Alex, to the Bigfoot sightings, and because this are you and folks in Arizona are referring to it as the Mogollon Monster. Have you gotten any plaster casts of footprints of this beast?
We did, actually. One of our first, it was our first major expedition. We had done some probing, individual probing missions, each of us, but our first major expedition with a group of us together, one of the team members found a print. We casted the print. We took the print out through our contacts that we had made prior to that, one with Jeff Meldrum, one with Tom Biscardi. We got ideas on how to cast the print, you know, and Jeff told me, don't worry about the type of plaster. You don't need the fancy dentist plaster, HydroCal. He said, just get regular plaster. Make it loose and get it so, you know, so it'll get in every nook and crevice and get some dermal ridges if there's any there. What Tom told me is don't clean the print. Take it home and under a microscope go over the bottom side of it, the dirty side, and see if there's any hairs. And we did that, and who would have known? We would have been brushing it off right in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, we the print came out pretty good. There was a root going through the middle of it, so it looks like the mid-tarsal break is really, really exaggerated, but that was a root. And, of course, the root didn't come up with the cast. Well, part of it did. We cut it out.
You mean like a tree root?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And then, you know, the bottom of the cast, you can see we have photos of it, and I did put those photos. I sent them to Bob, and I did put them in the media section, in the AZCRO Facebook section. The bottom was pretty dirty, and what happens if the dirt has any kind of stickiness to it, or maybe the twigs around the foot, they'll pull off little pieces of hair. And, you know, this can happen with any animal. And sure enough, in this casting, we found a hair, and we found some spots that had possible dermal ridges. Pretty good cast. It's 19 inches long. It's 7 inches wide at the foot, about 6 inches wide at the ball of the foot. 7 inches up by the toes in the arch.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge footprint.
All right, now, with this hair, did you send this hair to have it tested anywhere to get DNA?
Well, we've gotten hairs in other ways, too. We got a couple of hairs from hair traps we put up later that same year. And no, because we didn't want to send the hairs to anybody. We contacted people, Henner Fahrenbach, and we got some photos of hairs that he's taken, and we got bear hairs, and we, you know, under the microscope, we got bear hairs, we got other animals, elk hairs, wolf hairs, coyote hairs, and we got what Henner thinks is, you know, Bigfoot hairs, unknown primate hairs, and gorilla hairs, and we compared them, and of course human hairs, and we compared them under the microscope, and I got photos of the hairs, of the raw hairs. They're not the microscopic photos. They're photos of the hairs when we found them, when we retrieved them. And they were similar to the hairs that Henner Fahrenbach found and cannot classify. So he has classified them as, you know, what he thinks is Bigfoot hairs or unknown primate. They are similar to a human hair, but they don't have a medulla.
Okay, explain to the audience what is a medulla.
Well, maybe your expertise is a little better than mine here. It's a layer of the hair that's common to humans and most other animals. And I am off my game right now and cannot remember exactly what it is for, but very few animals do not have a medulla, and gorillas do not have a medulla. So,
okay, now
this unknown primate here, you know, we don't know what it is, but
okay. So, whatever it is, it's either got to be unknown primate or it's got to be a gorilla because it has no medulla. So it's not human. It's not a bear. It's not anything else that we know of. So it either has to be a gorilla or it has to be an unknown primate. Now, you sent our producer some photographs, and unfortunately, I simply ran out of time and didn't get those loaded into our software so that I could show them on our TV screen. But I want to talk about this set of, I think there's four photographs that are thermal imaging.
Those were taken in November of 08, I believe. It could be November of 09. We were in an area, the hot zone, that we, Mitch and I go to with some team members. Mitch was not actually there, and we had this piece of equipment with us for the first time. Not just a portable piece of equipment, you know, like a handheld. This thing had to be strapped over your neck, and, you know, one person more or less had to carry it and run it and just kind of be a guinea pig. It was kind of a great experience to get to use it. It was a bigger piece of excitement or experience to actually have a hit like that.
Okay, well, let's describe for the people so they can visualize what it is that was the big hit. What I saw in the first photograph is trees, and then something behind the trees that I really couldn't distinguish. In the next version of that, what you did, I guess, was change the contrast so that it brightens up that thing. And it has generally a hominid shape. In other words, it's got arms. It appears to be standing upright. And then the next photograph is the same thing, but it apparently is no longer facing you. It's turned sideways to you. That's what it looked like to me. And then in the brightened contrast, I can see what appears to be the shape of the profile of this thing standing up. It's got a huge head on it. Now, you guys, you took these photographs in November of 08 or 09, and you're up in the hot zone, which is not far from the Mogollon Rim. Did you see this with your naked eye or only on camera?
Only on camera. With your naked eye, it would be more like the first and the third photo, just completely blackness. Where the hot zone itself is about 5,800 to 6,000 feet, and you know, this whole area we call the hot zone, but we were about 5 miles up the mountain, and about 1,400 feet above the level, so, you know, about 7,200 feet. It was November. It was 26 degrees out. It was real cold. We were bundled up, you know, like Eskimos ourselves, and we're walking around with this piece of equipment, and we were walking mostly on the road. It's a dark forest road, mountain road, and we got the hit on the camera, and, of course, none of us were brave enough to go into the woods. We did throw a couple of rocks in its direction, and to say it didn't flinch wouldn't be true, but it didn't move. But we were watching it, just like you said, and I did not tell you this. You got that right on your own. We were watching it sit there, turn and sway back and forth. And all I could think of is it was deciding what it was going to do. Was it going to charge us, maybe? Was it going to run away? Which way was it going to run away? And it was sitting there, sitting still, and it would turn. And what we did at one time, we couldn't make it, you know, by throwing stuff into the trees, we couldn't make it leave or come out or do anything like that. In fact, if anything, it almost looked like it would crouch down more when we threw something in there. So what we did instead was we walked away and walked up the road.
Is this camera a still camera or is it a video camera?
It's both. It's both. So basically, it's a video camera.
So you got video of all this?
We didn't actually record any video, but we did record stills.
Uh-huh. Okay, now...
It's capable of recording video, but it was the first time we had it with us, and we just recorded stills.
Okay.
Or if we did record video, he didn't give me any of the videos. It wasn't my piece of equipment.
All right, now... Have you been back to that area with that equipment since then?
We haven't been back with that equipment. We've been back with similar equipment. Been back with, you know, many different kinds of night vision equipment, a smaller handheld thermal. We've been back to that location many, many times in the daytime where we didn't need that equipment. And, you know, over and over again, because now every time we go by that spot, we'll tell people this is where that was taken, and they want to see it.
Have there been any more incidents where you've seen these creatures through thermal equipment?
Not as good as this one. We've had some hot spots hit on equipment that, you know, is just a dot or a ball where you know something's there but have no idea what, and it could be something much smaller or it could be just a smaller signature.
Well, these thermal pictures that you sent me, I'm not going to tell you folks that this is absolutely clear photographs. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that these are clear enough that we can compare the size of this creature with the trees around it. And because it's thermal, we know we're looking at something hotter than the trees. Okay. You compare it to the size of the trees around it. This is a big, big thing, whatever it is. How big would you think it is?
8 or 10 foot high, yeah. Maybe even 12.
Yeah. And how far away were you from this thing?
20, 30 feet, depending on how thick the trees were. We're actually looking through a clump of bushes here.
Mm-hmm.
We were probably 20 feet from the bushes, you know, 20.
So maybe another, bushes. Possibly another 10 feet to the creature.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, you know... That's not much ground to cover if it wanted to charge you.
And you know, the people we were with were all armed. One is a Phoenix police officer. So they're not timid guys, but none of us were, I guess, stupid enough to charge in there ourselves, or brave enough, you know.
All right. Now, based on the actions of this creature as you have just described it, based on the actions of these creatures as many people have described them, what would you say? Are they animal? Are they human? Or are they both?
I think they're probably both or somewhere in between. They seem to play with us. They seem to be curious about us. They're also cautious about us. Shortly before this, this was 08, by the way. Shortly before this, when I had my sighting, we had been below this at the 6,000-foot level. We had been having some incidents all day. We got back to the base camp, had a couple more incidents, went for a search of whatever was doing the plane with us, the incidents. Rocks were rolling into camp and twigs were breaking. Didn't find nothing. Had settled down for dinner. Some guests arrived. And I had left camp to put a sign up for somebody. And I'll make this as quick as possible because I might have told this story on your show the last time. The creature that I saw, I walked down the road. I walked about a quarter mile away. There was some noise going on from an ATV a fellow camper had going. The ATV shut off, and I heard twigs breaking in the branches near me. I looked directly to my left, and there was a creature standing right there, probably the color of a dark brown orange, slightly darker than the color of most elk. This one was not a giant creature, but it was muscularly built. It was only my height or slightly bigger, 6.5, maybe 7 feet tops. And that's guessing because he was off the road and I was on the road, or she. It appeared to have the cone head that the thermal picture has.
Oh, that's another thing. Let me say, I did notice that as well. It has a cone head,
which is a feature that gorillas get, and as I've heard Dr. Grover Cranch describe, it's to do with the muscles that they need to hold such a massive jaw up there. So the muscles kind of form this cone as they attach to the skull. And what happens is that all apes have them, but they only start to form in the apes as they get larger. So both male and female have it, but the male apes tend to be larger and they form, you know, quicker. On the creature that we saw, in the thermal, it has a pointed head.
Mm-hmm.
It also has in the slightly side view what looks like long hair. The creature that I saw was the exact same. The hair, the longer hair, as you know, on the profile, went completely down its back and formed almost like a hump or a mane. It was so big and so puffy. And it almost gave the appearance that it wasn't even a hominid because the hair was so puffy. But it ran away from me completely upright. It didn't drop down. It didn't look like it was uncomfortable, completely upright. It just has hair down its back that gave the appearance that it was stiffer back there.
Well, you know, we hear all these accounts of people who have seen Bigfoot. And right here on this show, I had a practicing psychologist on this show who told about he and his family seeing a Bigfoot when they were on a hiking trip. So it's people from all walks of life. And by the way, in his case, he's almost 7 feet tall. And he said this. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and this thing was bigger than him. So, but when we hear all these stories where people talk about the actions of these Bigfoot or these Sasquatch, their actions seem to show signs of thinking and planning ahead. Their evasiveness is one thing. You're talking about how they'll play with you. They'll toss a rock into camp. That sort of thing. And yet they are clever enough to stay out of sight most of the time. And it seems that they are able to think and to plan. Now, maybe not, but that's the way it appears. That being the case, I don't think we can say that these are just animals. I think you're right. I think it's got to be, you know, somewhere between animal and us. I've heard people say, well, do you think maybe it's the Neanderthal, some leftover Neanderthal? And the answer to that is no. Neanderthal were shorter than us. So I don't know what it is, but it seems to be more than just an animal.
And they seem to be somewhere in between Neanderthals, chimps, apes, and humans. Preliminary reports, and this explained things really perfect for me, but I think these reports have since been come back with different data. But for the sake of argument, they explain things for me. Neanderthals had, I believe, and I could have the amounts wrong, but the ratios I'll have correct, 8 chromosomes different than modern human. And test on what we think are Bigfoot DNA had half that, 4 chromosomes different, or 4% compared to 8% of the chromosomes. So, and forgive me for not knowing the exacts on the data, and everything that you've asked me is available on our website with all the exact figures. I just cannot grasp everything in my head.
All right. Now, you mentioned some of the DNA from these Bigfoot, Sasquatch. Where did that DNA come from?
Dr. Melder Marco in Texas is...
All right. We have to step away for break. We'll get an answer to that question when we come back, and we'll open the telephone lines for you. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are talking this evening with Alex Hearn. Alex, I had asked you this Bigfoot DNA, where it had come from, and you just begun to answer. Let's go ahead and get the answer to that, and then we'll open the phone lines so our audience can join us if they wish.
I was actually going to answer you with the wrong answer, too. I always confuse Dr. Melba with Dr. I always want to say Imelda. It's Dr. Melba, catch him. And, but she's doing a DNA study now on evidence thought to be Bigfoot DNA. What we sent her originally was DNA from the toenail that we got in Seligman, Arizona, back in 2009. And there's photos of this toenail on the AZCRO Facebook page and the AZCRO forum. I think I included that for you guys. I may not have, but I can if you want it. What it was is Larry Jenkins, a friend of mine, and only met him through this, but we've become really close. Owns a 50-acre property up in Seligman, north of Route 66. And on that property, he's been having some incidents. And after one incident, he checked the location where the noises came from that he thought, you know, was a possible Bigfoot. And sure enough, there was a rock that was looked like something kicked it and stubbed its toe, and there was a blood on the rock and some skin and some hair and a toenail. Skin matter, you know, couldn't tell if it was skin or not.
Mm-hmm.
But some, you know, matter and a toenail. And he, best as he could, they tried to, you know, keep it safe and clean, and they picked it up and they called Tom Biscardi, and he sent some of us down there, and I actually couldn't go on that one, and Rex went and retrieved the toenail, got it back to Tom. He sent it off to Melba, and her preliminary tests, we were told, were of the ratios that I gave you, and I think later tests prove on that toenail, or at least she said, that it was 100% human. Now, we haven't been able to get the actual report, the actual data, so we still don't know what's true. Dr. Melba Ketchum is going to come out with a full report, and it may include the data from the toenail, but it's going to include data from all other samples that she's got also. And she's trying to prove through many forms of DNA that something consistent exists. So that's pretty cool.
Okay. I am going to open up the telephone line so that our audience can join us with their questions or comments. And ladies and gentlemen, the phone lines are open. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. Toll free in the USA and Canada is 888-223-4599. So if you cannot call me without it costing you long distance, you may use the toll free number, 888-223-4599. Now, for those outside of the USA and outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number for out there. You can call our main number, 623-444-5889, and we would love to hear from you. If you're outside of the USA and outside of Canada and you don't want to make that international long-distance call, what you can do is go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, you'll see the photo, the picture about tonight's show. On the right side of that is a link that says Flash Message. You may use that and send your question or comment to me that way, okay? So the phone lines are open, and folks, hey, there's no possible way for me to think of every question. So if there's something that you think our guest should be asked, then use that telephone number and call, participate, help make it happen, all right? 623-444-5889. Things sort of come and go, you know, something is a fad for a while and then it's not, and you know, we saw, you know, the ghost hunters and then a whole bunch of ghost hunter type shows and other types of paranormal shows. And we saw that sort of come in like a tsunami, and it seems to be ebbing a little bit now in public interest. The same thing is true with hunting Bigfoot. These things, they come into sort of come into fashion and then go out of fashion. You've been doing this a number of years, whether it's in fashion, in fad or not. What keeps you going?
I long for knowledge and the truth. You know, I'd be one of those people that would just keep going back to school if I could, because I've never finished learning. You know, I've never ever thought I was smart enough that I needed to stop. I didn't need to learn anything further. And then when you have something happen, and I've been lucky enough that when I was a small child, something happened that's mysterious to you. You know that there's something else out there.
What happened to you as a small child? What is it?
The first thing that happened to me as a small child is I was followed out of the woods up in Woodstock, New Hampshire, Lincoln, New Hampshire, by something that sure sounded to me like it was walking. I never actually saw it. It followed me for a couple of miles, stayed off to the distance behind me and to the right. But when I stopped, it stopped. When I walked, it walked. And when I got close enough to the mountain road, I was on a deer path. And when I got close enough to the mountain road that I could see the break in the trees, you know, a couple hundred yards ahead, if you've ever walked through the forest, you know what I'm talking about. Once I knew I was close enough to the road that I could make it without running out of breath, I started running as fast as I could. And when I started doing that, the trees and branches started breaking at that same rate, you know, which scared me even more. I thought for sure when I get out to the road and turn to my right to go down the mountain road to the vehicle, that it was going to come crashing right out at me because it was to my right in the woods. But it just stopped. It didn't come out to the road. It stopped before it got to the road. Whether it couldn't get through at that point, maybe the brush got too thick, or it just didn't care, I didn't know, but I kept running. And later that night, I was at a restaurant, and we had parked at the restaurant, the cafe owner's house that day to go hunting. So they were asking us about the day, and my dad was teasing me about the incident. And, you know, the lady was really nice, especially to me, so she was, you know, what's the matter? And I wouldn't tell her, so my dad did, and she's like, oh, he's not wrong. That's just Big Ben. And then they went on to tell us that all the locals know of this man of the woods or creature, and they just call him Big Ben because he doesn't hurt anybody. And, you know, people have seen them watching him before, and they just figure he's making sure everybody's okay or something like that. So she's like, yeah, he's just making sure that you're getting out of the woods okay. And, you know, I don't know if she was right or not, but that sure seems like whatever it was doing. My dad was hunting further into the forest. He has leukemia, and there's no way he had polio as a kid, and there's no way he could have kept up with me. He does pretty good, but, or at least back then he did, but he had one leg shorter than the other, and, you know, he couldn't keep up with me, especially not through the forest, and especially not if I was on the path and he wasn't. So it wasn't my dad. It wasn't any human that we know. Whatever it was chased me through the forest. And then I've had a couple of, and I know you like this. I've never told you about this before, but I've had a couple of UFO incidents, and I had a giant bird incident back home also in Bridgewater, Mass, probably smack dab in what would be the Bridgewater Triangle, which I lived in for a couple years. I've also lived in Salem, Mass for a few years. So I've been lucky enough to be in the line of fire, so to speak, in many different things, and just really lucky in that regard.
Pardon me. Well, one of the things that I think a lot of people, as the interest in the general public, as the interest begins to ebb. It never goes away. It just sort of goes to the back burner for a while, and then some incident happens, and it's back. It's back on the front burner again. But as it begins to ebb and begins to move to the back burner, one of the things that a lot of people will say is, well, you know, we look, and we never get the proof. You know, one of the things I think we could say about that is, well, I think there is proof that there's something out there that it's some kind of creature that we don't know, and maybe there's no proof yet that it is Sasquatch. But there's something out there that's runs, you know, 7 to 12 feet tall, leaving gigantic footprints, being seen by people all over the United States and really all over the world. Different versions of it, you know, you get up in the Himalayas, they're generally white, but not all of them. You know, they're in Australia, they're in Indonesia, they're in the United States, they're in Canada. They seem to be all around the world. We know they're in Russia as well. They go by different names, but people for centuries have been reporting seeing these things. Have you talked with any Native Americans about their version of what these things are?
I'm lucky enough that now in Arizona I'm able to liaison with both the Apache and the Navajos greatly, and they're wonderful, wonderful people. We have a Native American woman on the forum that is telling us about incidents and what she was that's happening to her now, and what she was taught over the years.
Let's cut to the chase on this, because we have a caller on hold. So are they telling you that these are people, or are they telling you that it's an animal?
They believe something along the lines that they are the keeper of the forest, the protector of the forest, the old man of the forest, and they're to be respected. They won't harm you, supposedly, unless, you know, you are doing something to the
forest. All righty. Caller, are you willing to hang on through the break? Yeah, okay, we'll get you first up right after the break. We have to step away, folks. We'll be back right after this. To the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Alex Hearn. And let's go straight to the telephone lines. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Alex. This is Leslie from Oregon.
Ooh, Leslie, we can barely hear you. Hang on a second.
Can you hear me any better now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I was wondering what Alex thought about. I've heard people talk about how the Bigfoot, they might either be like ETs, or they've seen them around UFOs or something along those lines. Just wondered what he thought about that.
Well, forgive me, I'm that tickle in my throat, Leslie. So if I have to cough, forgive me. I took a drink. I didn't put much weight into that at first, but it's amazing how many Bigfoot sightings there are at the same time there are UFO sightings. And then for all you UFO experts out there, you probably know Arizona's biggest celebrity when it comes to UFOs, at least UFO abduction, is Travis Walton. And I've spoke to Travis a couple of times, And it's amazing how close his abduction location was to the area that we've been talking about tonight and to, forgive me, guys, 1 second. Dry air in the tickle.
Yeah, okay. I think we sort of get the picture. Does that answer it for you, Leslie? Hang on, Leslie. There we go. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the call, Leslie. Yeah, there's it seems, a connection. Whatever that connection may be, and for whatever reason that connection may be, I don't know. But there seems to be a connection between the Bigfoot and UFOs.
I'm back.
Okay.
My eyes are still watering.
Okay. Well, maybe we only have a few minutes left, so maybe you'll make it. Let's go back to the telephone.
Sorry.
And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
Oh, is that me?
That's you. You're on the air. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, I'm dealing with the issue of...
Wait a minute. Your first name and from where are you calling?
That came to my mind.
Your first name and from where are you calling?
Remote.
Okay. Sorry about that. You got to listen. I need to know who you are and where you're calling from, okay? I invite you to call me right back. I'll take your call, but you got to listen. Your first name and from where are you calling? 623-444-5889 is the number to call, and we would love to hear from you if you have a question or a comment about the cryptids, and particularly cryptids in Arizona, but it doesn't have to be. Cryptids anywhere will work. So I was saying, I don't know what the connection really is, but we get a lot of those UFO and then Bigfoot sightings around the same area. You know, one of the things I've thought, Alex, is it's possible these Bigfoot are out there all the time. They're out there, you know, they don't watch TV. You know, they're not, they don't have to get up early tomorrow morning and go to work. Very possibly they're watching the night sky and they see these UFOs. And if they see one land or looks like it's landing, maybe they gravitate toward it to see what's going on. And that's why we see Bigfoot around UFO sighting areas. What do you think?
I think that's very possible because that's exactly what they do to humans. It's very rare that you surprise a Bigfoot. There's just very little likeliness that you're going to surprise them. Especially, you know, you hear people say they came upon this Bigfoot kneeling. Well, I find those reports a little bit hard to believe. You know, here's a creature that's the most stealthy and intelligent creature in the forest. It's very cautious of its surroundings at all times and knows, you know, whenever humans or any animals are around, probably, we think.
Mm-hmm.
To think that its senses would just shut off because it's looking at something on the ground or grubbing or something like that, I think is probably bizarre. So those reports might not always be correct. You know, in some cases they might be. Maybe the Bigfoot thought he was just going to hide or sit still and you wouldn't see him, because that seems to be what happens a lot. But you don't find these creatures either. You know, you're not going to just go into an area you think is prime Bigfoot habitat and find a creature. Usually what happens is you get reports that somebody's, you know, had an incident, if you're a researcher and you go to that area and, you know, if you do the right things, and that is basically don't scare it away, you got a good likelihood to have an incident. And you were talking about data. We have everything there is except for a body. And just Mitch and myself alone have the full gamut. We have footprints. We have photos, not a $1 million photo, but some pretty good ones. At least Mitch has some great photos. We have hair. We have scat. We have, you know, possible DNA in the form of a toenail and other matter from other incidences. We have pretty much everything there is except for a full body. I asked Peter Burns just the other day when I was speaking to him. He's one of the oldest Bigfoot researchers that I know of. And, of course, everybody I think that's in the field's heard of Peter Burns. And I said, Peter, what's it going to take to solve this mystery? Will they take a partial body? Will it have to be a whole body? And he wasn't sure either, but he said, without a body, that we'll never find it. It doesn't matter how good the picture is. It could, you know, come right up to the camera and smile and click the button itself. But someone will say that's a fake and they won't believe it. We'll need a body. We'll need, you know, a good portion of the body to name any new species, whether that's a bug, a bird, a fish. You need an actual body.
That is true. I want to thank you for being with us this evening, Alex. And folks, if you click the picture, Alex's picture on my website, it will take you to his website, and you can see there all the data and all of the pictures and all that stuff. And I invite you to do that. Remember, when you call in, I'm going to ask your first name and where you're calling from. Now, tomorrow night, I'm going to be going somewhere we haven't gone before. We're going to be exploring what is alleged to be the tomb of Osiris. And did you know that's not his name? That's right. That's what the Greeks called him. So we're going to be exploring the tomb of Osiris. We're going to be exploring what information has been discovered and what information has either been discovered and not released to us or hasn't been discovered, but there's a great gaping black hole in it. We'll be looking at Osiris tomorrow night. Be sure you're here. My friends call me Steele. I, my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.